Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay. I am your host, Mike Jokum. Frenchie's here with me. Is this our first F1 episode of the year?
Happy New Year, everybody.
Yeah, Happy New Year. If you don't listen to the IndyCar episodes, shame on you.
You should. Yeah, you should.
Shame. But
you can like both.
Yeah, listen to both every week. And I don't really care if you leave iTunes reviews because those mean absolutely nothing. But, you know, if you want to, that'd be cool. But we're going to start with trivia. Frenchie, I pulled up a list of 10 trivia questions here because I'm tired of you getting getting it right, like right away. So if you get this right away, I will have a few more ready to go. Okay, first up, who won the inaugural Constructors' Championship? This would be 1958.
1958?
Yes.
Interesting. There's a couple different teams I could guess. I'm just going to guess because my knowledge doesn't go back that far.
And that's why I went. I have one more for. I'll give you one more question afterwards, too.
Okay. Was it Van Wall?
God damn it.
Yes.
All right. Well, that did not go according to plan. All right. Let's jump down here to the 1996 Monaco Grand Prix. Featured how many cars crossed the finish line at the end of the race, and how many cars were classified as finishing because they turned enough laps but still DNF'd?
That's hard. I'm pretty sure it was like 3 or 4. It was not very many.
That would be incorrect.
Okay, was it 6?
It was 2. 2 finished, 7 were classified.
2 finished, that's it?
Yes.
I know Olivier Panis won. Who was in second place?
I don't have that handy to be totally. David Coulthard.
Okay.
Michael Schumacher was classified but crashed after just 6 turns, I think, if I'm reading that correctly. So
wait, he crashed after 6 turns? Corners?
He did not. He's not classified, but he did crash after just 6 turns.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
He's
96 Ferrari sucked.
He was very similar to my video game F1 skills. After 6 corners, I also typically crash. I think
usually
you
takes
too,
you more than that.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. I actually finished a race last night.
Yeah, and I didn't. So, why are you downing yourself?
Well, all right. We'll move on there. We don't have a ton of news to get to. But since it's been a while, and well, next week will be you and Hickey doing an F1 episode. So, because I'll be at IndyCar Content Day / in the middle of moving and setting up my host HQ in Indianapolis. So, what do we have?
There's been some news. I mean, not a ton, because we have, you know, the drivers were already set and everything before the new year, and we know the schedule pretty much, but we've got some news. The first thing I think to talk about is that Otmar Szafnauer, the team manager or team principal of Aston Martin is out. He, I guess, is being replaced by, we don't know who yet, but there are some rumblings as to why he left. From what I've heard, there are two possibilities of why he left. Number one is Otmar's apparently a really friendly, like affable guy who's very approachable.
How dare him.
He does a really good job of apparently just creating like a family atmosphere. And from what I've heard, Lawrence Stroll does not give a crap about that and just wants results.
Can't say I'm surprised. All right.
So that could be one, that basically their leadership styles don't mesh. And so he kind of got scapegoated. But he was with the team. He was with when they were Force India since like 2009. So
yeah.
I don't know if this is a good move for them. We'll see. But the other possible reason that he's out is because Martin Whitmarsh was hired there at Aston Martin in a position called, like chief performance officer or something of Aston Martin. I don't remember the title, but basically when there were rumors of that happening, I think Otmar he didn't know it was going to happen. He had denied that that was even going to happen. And then Martin Whitmarsh just showed up with a position that basically a lot of his role or duties overlapped with Otmar. So maybe there was kind of some friction there that pushed him out. But what do you think? Is this going to be good for Aston Martin? Do they need more stability? There are rumors that they're going to hire Cyril from Renault, Cyril Evitable, as their new team principal or, you know, whatever, team manager.
I honestly don't know enough about Cyril's background to comment on that, minus the last handful of years at Renault and his tattoo that he finally got for Ricardo's podium. But I'm going to say it's going to be a good thing in the long run, because while I appreciate Oatmeal's warm style to, you know, building a team, at the end of the day, motorsports is a results business, and they didn't have a good year. They're a very flash in the pan team. They seem to have good moments, and everybody's like, oh, they're going to do great the next 6 weeks, and then they kind of fall flat again. So I think a change with the new 2022 car is, yeah, I mean, if you're going to make a change, if he was pushed out, this is the perfect time to do it. So obviously time will tell if it's a good move, because, I mean, listen, things happen. Haas the first year was pretty good, and now they're dog shit. So, you know, we'll see. But I think for right now, I'll give it a chance. I don't think it's I don't think it's the wrong avenue to take right now.
We'll see. I'm not sure I agree, because I don't think you can kind of blame the performance on just Otmar. I think he's kind of being scapegoated in this position, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, that's what happens when you're the team principal. You are the scapegoat.
Yeah, I think the problems run deeper there, and you can't expect to get results as fast as Lawrence Stroll probably expects just by injecting cash. And you'd need to replace Lance anyway, so
yeah,
you got to do that first.
All right. I mean, yeah, one of those things is not going to happen, though.
True. There's also a rumor that Andrew Green, the chief technical officer of Aston Martin, who's taking over the role in the interim until they find a new team lead, might also leave, because he's pretty close to Otmar, which if that
did
happens,
I send that
do you
to
think,
you? Is that the one I sent to you?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's going to, again, I think that's long term maybe is okay. Short term will really hurt them at the, you know, because we're, God, 5 weeks away ish from 6 weeks away from the first test of the year. So if you're leaving now, it doesn't matter for you, but it sucks for the team.
Yeah. Okay. Moving on to the next topic, we have seen that Williams won their case against Rocket, who was their sponsor starting in 2019, and they had agreed to a 3-year contract, but then COVID happened, the season was delayed, and apparently Rocket just stopped paying. So a court, the London Court of International Arbitration something tribunal, has ruled in the favor of Williams, and apparently they're going to make $35 million or £1 million from this deal in small installments.
So they can upgrade that woodworking shop to include table saws now.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. All right. I'm not too confident it will really do too much, but I mean, good for them. Hopefully Rocket still has, I would imagine they still have plenty of money, because they are a pretty large company, but also I don't want anything to happen to their IndyCar sponsorship.
No, I don't either, but I think IndyCar probably provided a cheaper alternative to sponsor while the racing was still going on, while F1 was kind of in limbo. And so instead of sponsoring Williams, they got on Foyt's cars, which is like the Williams of IndyCar.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I'm just going to leave it at that. Go ahead.
Anyway, Rocket, thank you for being a sponsor. But now you got to pay Williams. So enjoy that. Cough it up. One of the next things that I was seeing in the news that's pretty interesting is that a lot of people have been commenting, but most specifically Nico Rosberg and then Gasly himself have been commenting on Gasly deserving basically more recognition and reward for how he performed this past season. And let's see what Nico Rosberg said. He said that Pierre's really, really awesome to the extent where you're surprised that Red Bull doesn't take him back into the mother team, but you'll never know if he's able to perform under the pressure of Red Bull. That's the big question mark, which is left, and that's why they didn't put him back in. But he's doing a phenomenal job at AlphaTauri. And then Pierre himself said that he's kind of disappointed, right? But that he expects, after his contract is up at the end of this next season in 2022, that the 2023 season will allow him the opportunity for a ride with a big team. Do you see any room for him at Red Bull, or is that just kind of out of the question?
I don't see it, to be totally honest with you. Especially, I don't think Perez was particularly great last year. I mean, he had moments, you know, like that defense on Lewis Hamilton, but I think for the most part, he was subpar. He had some pretty pitiful qualifying efforts for a Red Bull, but I think he'll be at least decently better this coming year. And if you are Red Bull, you have the perfect person you want alongside Max Verstappen. Whereas Gasly, you know, he's young, he wants to fight for wins, he wants to fight for a championship. If I'm Gasly and my contract is up and I have the chance to be the number two at Red Bull or I don't know, go somewhere else. I mean, I sent you that list earlier. There's 10 contracts up at the end of the 2022 season. So there should be a good amount of movement again. Obviously, there will be a handful of young drivers that come up and who knows what else will happen. But I'm still, and I know Matt said this a while back, I said it a while back, I'm sure you've said it. If I were him, like, yeah, I'd be frustrated too. I totally get it. But you have to also look at, what does Red Bull want? Red Bull will always be Max Verstappen. Verstappen's still 23, 24 years old. Unless Verstappen pulls a Michael Schumacher and signs somewhere else, you're always just going to be the number two. And for some guys like Perez, perfect. That's what he's happy to do. He gets paid, he wins some races, he gets recognition for being Max Verstappen's teammate. Most drivers aren't going to want that, so I would go elsewhere.
That leads me to my next question of, where does Gasly go? Where do you see him going in 2023? You sent me the list of all the seats that open up, but do you think any of them are realistic?
Let me pull up that list.
It's really early for the speculation, but I still love it.
All right, so Sergio's contract is up after next year. I guess technically we can call that an option, but again, not the option I would pick. Aston Martin has a spot available. Vettel's contract is expiring. Who knows what he'll do? Ferrari has signs out of contract after next year right now. I don't think that's likely, because there's Robert Schwartzman and a couple other Ferrari Academy drivers like Mick Schumacher, who's also up for contract. Both of the Williams drivers are up after next year. That would be a mistake I don't see. So, boy. Oh, and Alonso, but I think that's a Oscar Piastri seat. So the options are slim. I think what we should do is tell him to come to IndyCar.
That'd be cool.
I know this is like our F1 episode, but yeah. That's where I'm going with that one.
F1 drivers from France tend to do pretty well in IndyCar.
Yeah, I think it would be a great idea.
Yeah, sounds good. Let's. You first heard that here. Gasly to IndyCar 2023.
Yeah, I don't know, man. There's not, when you look at that list, it's like, okay, a young driver could go there. A young driver could go there. He doesn't want to go to Williams. He probably doesn't want to go to Haas. So you're already eliminating like most of the availability. He's not going to go to Alfa Romeo if Guan Yu Zhou isn't brought back for whatever reason, because that's a Ferrari team as well. So you're down to Red Bull or back to AlphaTauri, essentially, I think is we can, or Formula E or IndyCar or Extreme E.
Yeah, I think you're right, which is kind of sad, because I think he's got the talent to show some results or get some results in a top team, but we'll have to see what happens. Leading on from that, and you mentioned the Ferrari Driver Academy, they actually released their list of drivers for the next year today.
Oh, okay.
And interestingly, this is the first time in a while that they don't have any drivers on their list in Formula 2.
Who's on the list?
So Callum Ilott's still on it, and they referred to his stint in IndyCar as a gap year.
That's a middle finger if I've ever seen one. Holy shit.
Yeah, it's kind of rude. And I thought his contract was longer than a year with Juncos, but maybe not.
I don't know that one, to be honest with you.
But Robert Schwartzman is still on the list.
Yep.
Mick Schumacher obviously is in F1 with Haas. And then they've also got Arthur Leclerc, Charles's younger brother, and then a bunch of other drivers in sort of lower series, like F4 regional series.
Yeah.
And so I think what this says, and it's a good thing, in my opinion, is they don't have all these drivers kind of sitting one step below F1, and kind of shows their future direction of they want probably Mick in their seat next, rather than kind of continuing to move people up and then just dangle the F1 ride and have too many people for too little spaces. What do you think?
I think that's fair. I mean, it's better. It's one of the few driver academies that we have a sense of the actual direction they're taking, whereas Red Bull just has like 96 academy drivers and Renault has whatever they call theirs, and Haas is playing paper football in the back. Yeah, I got nothing. That's all I got.
Yeah, it's Red Bull does it the way, I think, the opposite that Ferrari is choosing to move now. And I think Ferrari's approach is better at this point, but we'll see where it moves from here. But I just thought that was interesting, given what you were saying about Ferrari opening up. I think Sainz probably stays there if he has another good season next year.
I agree.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Get ready, race fans, because the ultimate NASCAR experience is about to hit the airwaves. Welcome to Pit Pass NASCAR, the podcast that takes you deep into the heart-pounding world of NASCAR racing.
Join us each week as we bring you closer to the NASCAR action with exclusive interviews and all the news and rumors you need with your favorite drivers, team members, and industry insiders.
So whether you're a fan of super speedways, short ovals, or road racing, or you've just watched Talladega Nights, Pit Pass NASCAR is the podcast you've been waiting for.
Get ready to fuel your passion for NASCAR like never before. Subscribe now to Pit Pass NASCAR on your favorite podcast platform, or head to evergreenpodcast.com and get ready to join us.
Launching in the fall on Evergreen Podcast Network. Follow us on social media at pitpass_NASCAR to stay up to date with everything you need to know about the podcast. Okay, so just a few more things to talk about before we wrap up for today, but kind of the big couple of items are that Stefan Johansson, former F1 driver for McLaren, Ferrari, and some other teams, and then also former IndyCar driver, wrote in his blog that he's been hearing from people in the racing industry, most people he's talked to about it, that said that they will not watch F1 anymore after the controversy at Abu Dhabi. He said he wishes the season could have been decided in a fair way, and he's had messages from so many people within the racing industry, and they mostly say that that was the last F1 race they will ever watch. That we all love the sport, but it's hard to get enthusiastic when stupid things like that keep happening. And he said, from the point of view of Liberty, I think it's quite clear who the winner of the two will be in terms of basically competition versus business. And he just hopes there will be a sensible balance moving forward.
So saying that you're not going to watch F1 anymore, I'm sure there are some people who won't. Okay, that's fair. But it's also like saying, I won't drink anymore when you wake up with a hangover. And then the next weekend, you're like, I'm going to go out and have a couple beers.
That's the perfect analogy for this.
Literally everybody who is of age that is listening right now has done that at one point or another. I did it a couple weeks ago. So I just, yeah, Listen, if you said that to Stefan Johansson in December, right after the race, and you don't actually watch, good on you. But I would say that's probably a very small minority of the people who are actually talking to him. And he might be exaggerating. He might have gotten five texts, and he might say, oh, so many people in the racing industry. I mean, I get it. You exaggerate when you start getting texts like that. But I would say most of those people are still going to watch.
Yeah, I really don't see it. In addition to your analogy about drinking, it's like going to Taco Bell. Like, you go there, you get sick, you feel like garbage after eating it, but then you still go back because it tastes good. Like,
I haven't been to Taco Bell in 5 or 6 years.
I haven't been in a long time either, but yeah, I will never say that I'm not going again.
Yes. I mean, yeah, fair.
So, because sometimes you just want it, and it fits that specific craving. Good. But I think you got to watch F1. I mean, if you're Stefan Johansson, you used to be an F1 driver, I think all these people that he's talking to are still going to watch it. They're going to be drawn to it. It's going to be all over the news. It's going to be another battle next season. There's new cars. Like, there's too much that's exciting for you not to watch it. And I'm not buying it. I just think this is dramatic reaction that we're still seeing, like, you know, a month after, basically, people going crazy about it.
Agreed.
Okay. So, just a couple more things. The first one, and I just enjoyed this quote, is that Mark Schurer, who used to drive in F1, I think he drove for Brabham at some point and some other backmarker teams, and he's a pundit in, I think it's in Germany. No, he's Swiss. He said basically that Bottas is actually a failure in traffic. He always gets stuck and has an insanely hard time. The guy just can't overtake other cars that are over a second slower with the fastest car in the field. That's his weakness. Okay, so from a guy whose best race finish was fourth twice, Mark Schurer, do you think that's harsh or accurate on Bottas?
A little bit of both. First off, the man has no room to talk. Bottas is way better for a driver than he ever was. So, and I'm not a big Bottas fan. Don't get me twisted here. I'm not defending him like Shannon would, but I mean, he does struggle when he gets caught in a bad spot and has to work his way through the field, whereas Lewis Hamilton does not in that Mercedes. So I understand what he said. I just think it's unnecessarily harsh coming from a man who had zero Formula One wins, zero Formula One podiums, and really his name is not recognizable. So please, Mark, go away.
Okay. That was harsh on Mark Schurer, but okay. Interesting.
If you want to be harsh, I'll be harsh too.
That's fair. I think you're right. And I think Mark Schurer, actually, even though he really doesn't have a place to be throwing stones from his glass house, I do think he's right about Bottas, and that Bottas is a fast driver. He has 20 pole positions in F1. But if you look at how many wins he has 10 wins, right? So I think he's fast and he's quick on a lap and he's good enough to be in F1. But when it comes to racecraft, he doesn't have it. He doesn't have the killer instinct, like you said, that Lewis has. So
yeah.
While I think that Mark Schurer is pretty irrelevant, even when he was racing in the early 80s, he might actually have a point here, but it doesn't really matter anymore as well, because Bottas is going to Alfa Romeo, who will probably not be passing very many cars next season.
Yeah. I'm curious to see how he'll do without the Mercedes pressure, but yeah, we'll go on to whatever you got next.
Well, actually, I wanted to mention, because this just sort of came into my head, that while we were talking about Bottas, he had the option to go to Williams, too. Those were his two options, apparently.
Yeah.
And he chose to go to Alpha because they don't have the Mercedes connection, so he doesn't kind of have to feel the lingering pressure or, I don't know, I guess just weird, awkward link to Mercedes if he went to Williams. Do you think that was the best choice for him, or should he have gone to Williams?
Fantastic move.
Okay.
Otherwise, you're going to be stuck with people going, well, he's doing well in a Williams because he knows the Mercedes engine. But also, there'd be pressure on him that maybe at this point in his life he just doesn't want. And a totally fresh restart, a mental reset. Yeah, I have no issue with his decision there.
Yeah, I wanted to give the opportunity for us to give Bottas a little bit of credit after kind of crapping on him a lot.
Yeah, that's job well done.
All right, so final two things. The first is that Nico Hülkenberg, in his role as a simulator test driver, has tested the 2022 car on the sim, and he says that the 2022 cars are pretty damn fast, but that it's going to be really difficult to follow in dirty air. That they aimed to be a bit slower, more challenging to drive, and have more focus on drivers that can make a difference rather than car performance and aero. But he said that they're not necessarily slower than the previous generation in his experience, and that it'll be interesting to see whether cars can really follow or not, because the cornering speeds are extremely high. Therefore, the risk of dirty air is still there, and it's difficult to imagine that following another car comfortably at those speeds will be possible. Is that a bad sign? Do we buy that from the Hulk, or?
I don't know if it matters yet. I think we're talking about simulator work, which, well, is incredibly important and way more advanced than iRacing or any other simulator that some of us have tried before. You know, I probably can't comprehend what a $100,000 simulator can actually do, but I think it's something to keep an eye on, maybe as a team going, okay, you know, this is what we saw and we can tweak before testing, and or at least have an idea of when I get in the car for testing, you know, who's he test drive for? I don't even remember.
I think it's Alpine. No, he's Aston Martin's test driver,
okay,
right?
So when Vettel or Lance Stroll get in the car, they have a little bit of an idea of what to expect, but I'm not putting a ton of stock into it yet. I think it's one of those, like, save it to your favorites and come back to it in like 6 weeks once the season gets underway, because testing is still, you know, you don't know what teams are trying. So we'll see after the first race of the year.
The more that I'm hearing like this, I am starting to wonder if in 2022 we're going to have basically crappy racing all the teams struggle to adjust to the new setup before 2023, where they get the hang of it and it gets really good again.
I think that's a fair concern and would be... How detrimental do you think that would be to all of the positive momentum F1 is bringing from 2021? Even though the end of the year sucked, it was still a good year overall.
I think for people who are more casual fans who got into it for the battle that we saw at the end of 2021 or throughout the whole season, actually, they'll lose interest pretty quickly.
Yeah.
For the diehard fans, it's not going to matter. Of course.
Yeah, I mean, you and I are still going to watch. Matt is still going to watch.
Stefan Johansson's not, though.
He's still going to watch.
I'm kidding.
I was about to flip you off there. All right, let's move on to the last one before I actually do flip you off.
Okay. All right, so this is the big speculation on F1 Twitter, is that apparently Lewis Hamilton's future is unclear. And that I think Shannon sent this to us earlier, that there was an agreement between Mercedes and the FIA that in order for them to drop their appeal of the result at Abu Dhabi, Massey and some of the other officials would be fired before 2022. And apparently no one's really heard from Lewis in addition whether or not he's coming back. There's speculation about it. Do you think this is actually something to worry about, or are people just stirring the pot?
First off, I think I did predict that Mercedes dropped their appeal because they came to some sort of agreement about Michael Massey.
Oh, yeah.
I think I got that right. I don't want to brag, but it's not often I'm right like that. Now, that being said, we've got 6 weeks till testing. Lewis Hamilton owes it to nobody to speak publicly or anything like that. He's earned that. But it is kind of weird how we don't really know if he's racing this year. I'm not trying to, like, stoke the flames or anything and spread internet rumors, because that's that's not my game, but I would, you know, he's technically not confirmed for the year, right?
I think he's under contract at least through next year.
Oh, you're right. You're right. He did sign a contract, so he doesn't.
But I mean, he makes $55 million a year, or he did last year, and I don't know how much money he's got, but it's more than any of us will ever imagine to have. So he could buy himself out of his contract or make a deal, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure after last year, Mercedes would be like, yeah, we're cool. It's fine. That being said, I don't think he owes it to anybody to say anything publicly. With the contract technically already signed, if he's considering doing something else, I'm sure Mercedes already has a backup plan in place, and he doesn't have to say anything publicly until whenever he wants. I don't think we, as media or fans or followers of the sport, are owed anything until he's ready.
I honestly think it's probably better than speaking in public a lot. I mean, if you don't have anything good to say about what happened, then you just don't say anything, right? And that looks a lot classier. And I also think maybe this is a strategy to make the FIA shit their pants.
Yeah, can you imagine if you're the new FIA president and you can't get Lewis Hamilton on board? You immediately look like an asshole, and you haven't even governed your first race yet.
And it gives him so much leverage, Lewis. Yeah. I mean,
he has all the leverage right now.
Yeah. So I think this is just a strategy, probably. And I think we'll see him back on the grid because he's not going to go out like that.
I hope not. I do agree with you, but I hope not. That would be disappointing. I would get it, but it would be disappointing.
Well, in the strange circumstance that he does stop, who replaces him at Mercedes?
Nyck de Vries. Has to be. It's the only logical one that makes any sense.
Okay.
Because he's still Mercedes with Formula E, or you know, whatever with Formula E that used to be Mercedes. He test drove the car at the Young Drivers test recently, so he's been in an F1 car recently. So it'd be really either be him or Stoffel Van Dorn, and I think it's going to be Nyck de Vries. Let's just leave it at that.
Or do you just steal Vettel? No, I'm just kidding. That would never happen.
That would be really cool. I am a big Vettel fan now, but yeah, no. It's
Montoya? No, I'm just kidding. That would absolutely never happen.
Well, being that that's the end of what you have, I have nothing else. Next week, guys, as I mentioned at the beginning, Hickey and Frenchie here will be doing something F1 related while I get my life situated. So I'll be back on the F1 side in 2 weeks. Yeah, 2 weeks. And everybody, have a lovely weekend of racing.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.